Well, good evening. Greet you in Christ's precious name. Yeah, we're from Pennsylvania, so that's good enough. I want to thank everyone here for making our time here these last couple days. As we shared with you and as we learned to know new people, thank you for your hospitality and for your everything that you've done for us and making us feel welcome. Tonight, as Brother Keith said, the message is Christian Finances for Young Adults. And a lot of times, we like to think we're young. So tonight, this is for everyone. But I know it's to be geared towards the youth as they look forward to making decisions and things that take place in life. I'm going to, maybe you will say it's not possible, but I'm going to put the challenge out there this evening. Part of my message is a vision for debt-free living. Now, I'll clarify that as we go along some. As we think about the world today in which we live, we have, I'll just read a couple things here, an article that I got about debt. It says the average American family devotes 25% of spendable income servicing debt. Money problems are cited as a major factor in 80% of divorces. 63% of people who declare bankruptcy cite credit card debt as major issue. 70% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck or hand to mouth. In 1929, only 2% of American homes were mortgaged. By 1962, only 2% didn't have a mortgage. Forbes magazine surveyed the 400 wealthiest people in America. 75% said that the best way to build wealth is to get out and stay out of debt. And we're not talking about building wealth, but that's what it says here. The average car payment in America is $378 a month for 55 months. New cars lose 60% of their value in their first 4 years. The average millionaire purchases 2-year-old cars. In other words, cars that are 2 years old. 78% of people do not pay off their credit cards each month. For those who do not pay off their balance each month, the average outstanding balance is just over $12,000. Consumer debt in the United States, exclusive of mortgages, is $7,100 per person. People tend to spend 12 to 18% more if they pay with a credit card instead of cash. Financial problems are cited as a major factor in 80% of divorces. But I'm not sure when these statistics, they came up with these, but just stating that to say a little bit where our society is today. And that was before the last couple of years, I'm sure, when we've had the inflation we've had the last several years, or this past year, 22, 23. I have a quote here. Is Grandpa right when he said, "It's not the high cost of living young families are struggling with, but the cost of high living"? And I think today, as we look at where things are at, there's definitely a high cost of living. And so my challenge this evening, as we go through this a little later here, we'll look at, I'll go right to that. I want to use one of Gary Miller's stories from his book, and the influence of affluence. I want to give this a story just to, and I'll read some of it here. And he talks about, it's an example of debt from consumables. And I want to talk about consumables this evening. As we think about a lifestyle that is out of control today and gets many people into the snare of debt, is the debt from consumables. Gary Miller tells the story of the influence of affluence. Donald and Mary, as a young couple, stopped in one afternoon to talk a little bit about their finances with Gary. They were not overly concerned, just having a little difficulty with their cash flow. After some discussion, I asked them to fill out a personal financial statement to get a picture of where they were. Their list of debts was lengthy. This was a young married couple. They had taken loans for two cars, had debts to parents, grandparents, local merchants, and various credit card companies. They had borrowed for trips, gifts, eating out, clothing, and various other items they had wanted along the way. For only being married a couple of years, they had done a remarkable job of acquiring debt. After they had written down their debts, then he asked them to write down their assets. And that didn't take nearly as long. In fact, their total cash on hand, including savings, checking accounts, his wallet, and her purse, was less than $50. As they walked into my office that day, they carried two large drinks that they had purchased from the local convenience store. He said he couldn't help but mentally observing that the price of the drinks represented a good portion of their total net worth. But they didn't seem to be overly concerned. They were just having a little difficulty with cash flow, and they wanted some help to. They admitted that, you know, things were pretty tight lately, and which is why they stopped in. But they were confident all would turn out fine. In fact, they confided as they sipped their drinks, "We have committed our finances to the Lord, and we're confident He will see us through. After all, hasn't He promised to be with us to the end?" The verse in Philippians 4:19 says, "But my God shall supply all your need according to His riches in glory by Christ Jesus." Before we get too hard on Donald and Mary had both grown up in a typical middle-class American families. They had grown up with plenty, including nice homes, nice vehicles, and vacation every year. Donald and Mary had assumed they would live their lives the same way. It was the only way of life they knew. And so as they didn't know any different. And I just give that story to help us to think a little bit, and maybe us as parents, what are we teaching our young people? What are we teaching our children? Debt can become a cycle. It's deceptive. Debt is deceptive. Debt can be addictive as you go from one thing to the next. And we'll talk about credit cards a little bit, the snare of credit cards and what that does. And debt is also a form of servitude. You know, we are servant to the lender. And then there's that verse in Romans 13:8 where it says about, "Owe no man anything." So how do we do that? How do we owe no man anything? Well, if your payments are all current, everything's paid up to date, well, you don't really owe anything. Even when you have debt on your your property, your house, or your farm, or your business, or whatever it is, and we'll talk about that a little bit too. You know, if everything's current, you don't owe anything because you're paid up to date. So that's the only way I can see how we can obey that scripture, not to owe no man anything if we have debt. And so debt can be a real snare to us, and oftentimes it does become that. So how are we going to have a vision for living debt free? I think if we have a vision, if we have a goal of trying to live debt free, and I'm talking about consumer debt now. I'm going to split the debt between consumer debt, and consumer debt is debt that you have on credit cards and things that are being consumed. Could be anything like, you know, clothing and furniture and appliances, and I'll put a list there together. Of things that are consumable, things that don't last. They're only used for a while. They're consumed, and that's what I mean by consumables, consumable debt. And there's a lot of debt today in our country, in our society, that is for consumables. Proverbs 22:7 says, "The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender." So is it possible to live without consumer debt? And the other debt for assets, for housing, for your business, for farming, or whatever it is, I'm not talking about that this evening when I talk about consumable debt. That's for assets. That's debt that we have for assets. But I'm going to throw your personal vehicle, your car, in with the consumer debt. And we're going to look at that a little bit. Is it good to buy new or used, or what should we be doing on our consumables? And young people, my encouragement to you is don't get started in the cycle. One of the problems I think today, you know, tomorrow morning, we'll leave early and go home. So I have a couple of things that I want to say. And I don't know where your churches are here and where you as a group are, but I guess I wasn't supposed to say what I was gonna. The thought just left me, so it'll probably come back. I was talking about vehicles. Okay, so we'll get to that here shortly too. So can we live without any? I want to put the challenge to you as young people. Don't get started in that cycle of debt. And the thought where I was going to go was, I think one of the traps that our young people get in today, and maybe it's not their fault, but is the expensive wedding trips that they go on. You know, you need to go to some island, and you need to go to some exotic place. We were going to look up what we spent for our honeymoon almost 50 years ago. Actually, it'd be 49 years here in the fall. And we weren't sure what it was, and we didn't find the numbers, but we kept it somewhere. But we were thinking somewhere around maybe $600. We weren't sure. You know, motels were like $15 or something, and gas was cheap. And you young people, you can't hardly fathom that, and I know, but, you know, we didn't make the money that you make today. But there's a testimony of a young man that was in 1W service, and that was a little bit before my time, and they saved a couple thousand dollars while they were in 1W service, and they had saved that money up until they got out of 1W service. If I remember right, he had a couple thousand dollars to pay down on like a $12,000 place they were going to live in, you know, so they had their down money. And you know, we say we can't do it, it's a high cost of living today. Well, I think we can. I would like to put the challenge there to you. You can do that. And you will do without some things, and that's fine. And that's okay, because I've seen many people that have gotten started in that cycle, and it just goes on and on and on. And then they call and they say they have things are a little tight. And then you start going over with their, in the financial advising that I do, you start going over their bills and their payables and their this and their that. And you get down through the list, and then is there anything else? We tell them still, you got to be truthful. You got to tell us. We got to know everything in order to make an analysis of where you're at. And, you know, then they think a little bit, oh, yeah, we have this credit card over here. And well, what's the balance on that? Well, it might be $10,000, $12,000. And, well, do you have any more? Yeah, we have one over here, and that's maybe $20,000. And then we have one over here. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. It didn't look too bad until they get to their credit cards. So credit cards is one way that you can really get yourself in trouble real easy, because, you know, our economy is geared towards you as a customer buying the consumables. That's what keeps our economy going. Actually, the consumable spending today in America is 2/3 of our economy. The other 1/3 is for business, for investments in property, equipment, and manufacturing, and that type of thing. So we are a society that is just, we consume a lot. We probably consume more than most people do in other countries. So I told them already, I told some people already when they were had trouble with their credit cards, I said, you got to cut them up. You got to get rid of them. If you don't want to cut them up, take them and get a quart container, fill it with water, stick your credit card in it, and put it in the freezer. And that way, when you're tempted to use it, you have to thaw it out, and at least you'll think a little bit before you spend on it. So if you have trouble with credit cards, do I have credit cards? Sure. Do you have credit cards? Sure you do. But you do not want to become a servant to your credit card. It's a little bit like eating an ice cream cone, going and stopping at the ice cream place and getting some ice cream. And, you know, you buy that ice cream cone, and, you know, an ice cream cone depreciates very rapidly. And so you know, it's only going to last about 15 minutes, and then it's going to be gone. And so if you charged it, put it on your credit card, so you owe for something you don't have anymore. And, that's just a story, but that's a little bit how you need to think about some of them things that you just whip your credit card out for. So consumer debt. So there is a place for debt, like I said, for long-term, for your income, for your farming and stuff like that. But consumer debt. So what all things are you spending for? I made a list on vehicle loans, appliance purchases, mowers, buy clothing, furniture, hunting purchases, sports, computers, phones, Kindles, readers, laptops, all the media that talked about last night. So, and then using credit cards to pay off old credit cards. There was a little caption that I caught here. There was this salesman. The title is "Too Much Savings." And this salesman said, "Madam, you can buy this home freezer for what you save on your food bills." So he was trying to sell her a freezer. So that way she could save on her grocery bills, because she could buy things and, you know, she wouldn't live hand day to day. And the housewife said, "Yes, I know." But she said, "We are buying our car on the bus fares that we save." So they bought their car because they could save on bus fares. "Our washing machine on the laundry bills we save on, our house on the rent we save on, and we just can't afford to save any more right now." They just couldn't. They saved all they could. You know, we had a salesman. I shouldn't get sidetracked here too much, but a salesman come one time, wanted to sell us I believe it might have been a rainbow sweeper. I think rainbow sweepers, they're the ones that you put the water in or something, maybe. He was selling a sweeper anyhow. And I knew the young man, and so we left him come. And he was pretty good. He really was good. We told him, "We're not going to buy a we're not interested in a sweeper. We have central vac, I think maybe we had at that point. And he said, well, he wants to come and he had to do so many presentations, so I guess he wanted to try it on us. And he was really good. I can see where people if you didn't have your mind made up before he came, you probably would have bought a freezer from him. A sweeper from him. And if I needed a salesman in business, I think I'd go hire him because he could sell just about anything. Okay, I put vehicles in with the consumables. I just want to say a little bit about vehicles and a little more on credit cards, and then we'll go on to some other things. Vehicles, today, 97% have a loan, and 3% are paid for. And the vehicle rate of depreciation, the first year you own it, it depreciates by 30%. The second year by 17%, third year by 8%, and then 6% and 5%. So, within a couple years, your vehicle's depreciated 50, 60%. Now, if you have a high inflation and stuff, that's probably not quite true. So what's the purpose of a vehicle anyhow? What is the purpose for a vehicle? It's to get from, here to here. It was to get to here, and it's to get home again. Purpose of a vehicle is to get from point A to point B. Today, I'm afraid too many vehicles are a status symbol for people. I would challenge you young boys, and I don't know if you have any pickups or not, but and then I want to tell the girls to be careful if you do. I see too many pickups around today, expensive pickups. They have the lift kits on, they got the big wheel, the fancy wheels, it comes with certain wheels, then they got to buy other wheels and bigger, wider tires and put a row of lights on, maybe put some lights underneath because they lifted it up a little bit. And maybe that's just a Pennsylvania thing, I don't know. Hopefully it is. We'll deal with that in there. But and if you see that, girls, beware. Because I've heard different testimonies from young men after they had a family. And they had debt. And they had credit cards. And they said if only they, when they were younger, they could have saved a lot of money. Except instead, they spend it on pickups. And a bad investment. It's a poor investment, girls. It's a poor investment. If it's only to get from point A to point B, now there becomes maybe, Ray Shalm needs a pickup to drive to do hauling and stuff. That's a different story. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just to get from point A to point B. There was a number of years ago, and I'm not sure when the PT Cruiser came out, and if you have a PT Cruiser tonight, that's okay. But when they came out, I thought they were the coolest thing. I could imagine myself, I may have been, I don't know if it was 20 years ago, it was more, it's probably, if you think it's 20, it was probably 30, but whatever it was, I had white hair then already, when I was 50 or even before that. And I thought, wouldn't that look pretty good? I drive this PT Cruiser down and I get out, white hair, have this PT Cruiser. I thought it'd really be something. So it was wrong for me to have a PT Cruiser. It would have been wrong for me to buy a PT Cruiser. I never did, never went and bought one. But the Lord taught me a lesson. My daughter had an accident with our van, so they gave us a rental car. And boy, they gave us a PT Cruiser. So I drove it for about a week. I was glad to let it take it back and let it sit. That thing, there was no appeal there anymore. So what's right for one is maybe not right for the other, but to me, it would have been wrong to have a PT Cruiser. Not that it was too expensive. They were a little tinny, I thought. Well, we should stop on that. So So I was talking about vehicles. You know, they're a poor investment to start with. If you can use them to go from point A to point B, I'm not saying it's not wrong to buy a new vehicle, but if for getting started, you buy a used vehicle, because you're going to appreciate. You get a couple-year-old vehicle, and today they usually last for a couple hundred thousand miles. It's different than the buckets they had back when I was young. They would rust out. After a while, you didn't have much. The fenders were starting to fall off, and the big rust. Today, it's not. They don't rust near as fast. So paying cash, not having a loan on vehicles is what I'm recommending. And I'll give you just a little bit here. If you, if I had a chalkboard right on there, but if you started loaning money when you're 16 and you loaned money for 50 years, you paid $212.47 a month for car payments, that comes out to $127,482. If you pay what this update was here that I read, $378 for 600 months for 50 years, that's $226,000 that you pay just for payments for your vehicles. If you took that same amount of money and you earned 5% interest on it, you would have $710,000 by the time you're 66 years old, 50 years later. So it is a poor investment to pay a lot of payments on a vehicle. Credit card use, just a little bit on that. In the Hebrew, interest in the Hebrew means to bite like a serpent. So that's what interest does. It bites like a serpent. MasterCard, you have MasterCard, is the master in charge. That's a little. So are credit cards wrong? No, but they need to be used properly. They're very useful. You can, if I fly to an airport and I want to rent a car, you know, they won't even take cash. You got to have a credit card. So you need a credit card to function. So I think that's good. I think credit cards are okay for that. But you need to destroy them once before they destroy you. You need to destroy your credit cards. You need to, when you can't pay the balance off, well, then you need to do something. Stick them in the freezer. Put them away. The national debt in 1988 was $2 trillion. I should have looked. In 2003, it was $7 trillion. By 2015, it was $16 trillion. And I can't imagine what $1 trillion is. And today, it's a lot more than that. But if you took $1,000 bills and you wanted do $1 million with $1,000 bills, it would be 4 inches high. If you want to take $1,000 bills and stack them on top of each other for $1 billion, it's 300 feet high. And for $1 trillion, it's 63 miles high. I mean, that gets to the point where you can't even imagine it. So I didn't do the calculations or anything. That's just what an article said. So you can't imagine how much $1 trillion is. If you paid back $1 million a day, if the government paid back $1 million a day at 6% interest, it would take 2,000 years to pay off $2 trillion. So if we have $20 trillion by today, that would take us how many thousand years? 2,000 years to pay off, well, it would take 20,000 years to pay off $20 trillion, pay off $1 trillion a year. So, you know, they have no idea, they have no plans to pay back their debt to pay the deficit off. So they don't even talk about it anymore. Back a number of years ago, they at least used to talk about it. They were going to try and pay it off or pay something on it, but today they don't. Talk a little bit about buying small and paying, and then starting small and then buying larger later. I'm talking about a house. Talk about a property. And this example, of course, doesn't hold water no more because it's not large enough. Houses cost more than this. But just to see what interest does, and if you know, we can't always buy what we wish for. That's just not, and I challenge you as young people, don't get in that cycle of just spending and pay later. And our society, our economy is geared for that. But here's an example. If you would buy a small house, and the example they use is buying a small house for $80,000, and you can't do that, and you have $20,000 to pay down, so you make a $60,000 mortgage, and you pay that mortgage off in 7 years at 6% interest, your payment is $876.51. So the idea here is to buy a smaller house, pay that off in less years, and then sell that and buy a bigger house and end up with the same house that I'll give you an example on here in just a little bit. So you take that $80,000 at the end of 7 years, you take that $80,000 and you go and buy a $210,000 house. So now you have $80,000 to pay down in that. So you have a mortgage for $130,000. And you do that for 15 years at 5% interest with a payment of $1,028.03. At the end of all that, at the end of paying your second house off, you will have, it's a total cost of $278,673.04. But if instead of that you went and bought the $210,000 house first and you paid $20,000 down, you have a $190,000 mortgage, and you do a mortgage for 30 years at 5%, you have a payment of $1,019.96. So your payment is almost the same as it was for the smaller property, but you're making this payment for 30 years instead of buying the two properties, the first one for 7 years and the next one for 15 years, and so you pay that off in 22 years. The total cost on the $210,000 house, the bigger house, is a total of $390,186.53. Instead of buying the small house first and then the bigger house later when you needed it, of $278,000. So there's $112,000 difference there by paying it off faster, buying smaller and paying it off faster, and then going and doing a 15-year instead of a 30-year. You know, for many years, in the last number of years, interest, when it was low at 2 and 3% and that type of thing, 2, 3, 3.5, you know, interest was one thing. But we're at a different place today, and probably will be at a different, it'll be a little higher as things go on here. But it's going to make a big difference when you pay 6.5, 7, 8% interest instead of 2.5, 3%. So, you know, what do you really need? What do you really need? As you make decisions, young people, as you make decisions, you need to have a vision of where will this be? What will it do to us in 20, 30 years? And I know we could talk about inflation and we can talk about appreciation and all that, and we're not going to go there tonight. But there's a whole nother part of that. And sometimes, you know, it pays to buy a little more and because you sell for more and stuff like that. But I just want to challenge you on the consumables. As you're spending for the things that you consume day by day, as you're living, as you're going through life, You know, do you really need whatever it is? And you fill in the blanks there. I just challenge you to enjoy the freedom and the versatility that God gives you instead of being tied down to car payments and pickup payments and that type of thing, and can be free to do more of the Lord's work and where He calls you. So I would say you got to be careful of impulse buying, and just you got to separate your wants from your needs. And we could talk about a budget. A budget is a good way to help take care of all that. And we were not going to talk about a budget. And I'll just tell you about a young man that was, he had asked me to, I think he was an Amishman at that point, and he asked me to come, and he said their cash is tight. And I encouraged him to set up a budget. He said, no, he don't want to do that. He said, he don't really think that'll work. I said, okay. He said, well, you know, but that will help you. It helps 80% of the people to have a budget. And so this went time and for a while, for a good while, and he called. He's still struggling. He don't have his cash flow. And he said he just can't keep track of things. First of all, he had to separate his business from his personal checking account. That was the first thing. But he'd done some of that stuff. And so this went a while, and I figured, you know, then after a while you don't hear from him because things just didn't work out. Then I met him one day, and he was all smiles. I said, boy, you're happy. Yeah, he said, I started the budget, and he said, it works. He said, it really works. He said, I'm surprised. He said, I didn't know it could be that way. So let's seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, as we heard in our devotional. And, you know, young people, don't get caught up, not just young people, everybody, don't get caught up in the get-rich-quick schemes and things, and the too-good-to-be-true things. And you can just go on and on and on. Because worry is a thing that many people deal with. And there was this individual that was, he had learned how to take care of worrying. You know, worry can be hard on your health. It can stress you out and things like that. It says he told his friend he's not worried about it. His friend asked him about something, and he said he's not worried about it. And then he said, well, what are you going to do about it? He said, well, I hired a professional worrier. He does all my worrying for me. And that way I don't have to think about it. And then this other fellow said, well, that's fantastic. How much does your professional worrier charge for his services? Oh, he said, $50,000 a year. $50,000 a year. Where are you going to get that kind of money? He said, I don't know. That's his worry. So he was being paid for it. So anyhow, one thing, and I said the other night, I think maybe the first message, Friday morning, a message that you can think about a lot is the one on tithing. And I wanted to give an illustration, and I found it this afternoon. And I'll just give this illustration. This is about tithing. It's a different subject, and then I'll be done. Years ago, a man knelt with his pastor and prayed as he committed himself to God to tithe his income. His first week's pay was $10, and the tithe was $1. As he grew older, he became more prosperous. His tithe was $7.50 a week. Then it went to $10. He moved to another city, and his tithe was $100. Then it went to $200, and then to $500. Then he sent his pastor a wire. He said, come to see me. The pastor arrived at the man's beautiful home. They had a good time talking over old times. Finally, the man came to the point. He said to his pastor, he said, "Do you remember that promise I made years ago to tithe?" He said, "How can I get released?" And the pastor said, "Well, why? Why do you want to be released?" Well, he said, "It's like this," the man replied. "When I made the promise, I only had to give a dollar. But now it's 500, and I can't afford to give away money like that." The old pastor looked at his dear friend and said, "I'm afraid we cannot get released from the promise. But there is something we can do. We can kneel and ask God to shrink up your income again so you can afford to give a dollar." So if he was given 10%, you know, he was getting a lot more than that dollar as he was when he was paying 500%. So may the Lord bless you as young people and as everyone. As you find your way in life, we live in changing times. We live in uncharted times for us. A couple generations have grown up that know nothing about, you know, my dad, my father knew about the Depression, and some of you older ones here do. But, you know, most of us, we know nothing about that. We don't know what the Lord has for us, but we serve a God that doesn't change, and we serve a God that we can always trust in. So may the Lord bless you.